Well, thanks very much for listening to the program for Friday, May 18th, 2012 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It's the Federal News Countdown, where every week at this time we count down the three most important federal news stories of the week as selected by two people who are experts in the world of the federal government. And my experts this week are Alan Paller of the SANS Institute. Alan, great to see you. This is a great, some good cyber-related news this week. So
it's a big week for cyber.
Good time for you to be on, and I appreciate you being here. Great to see you as always. Larry Allen, the president of Allen Federal Business Partners, is here on the countdown as well. Good to see you.
Francis, thanks for having me back.
Happy to do it. You're just back from San Antonio, the GSA Expo, and boy, are your arms tired, I guess.
My arms and the arms of lots of would-be contractors.
All right, and that's something that we'll talk about in the countdown this week. We start with the third most important federal news story of the week, as selected by Larry Allen. You actually gave me two. You tripped me up here a little bit. these are both stories by Alice Lipovich from Federal Computer Week. One of them is headlined, DHS to obligate $8 billion in contracts by September 30th. And the other is at DHS, agile is the watchword, CIO says. That's Richard Spires. The $8 billion number between now and the end of the fiscal year, that's a big deal. That's a lot of money laying there.
It is a big number, Francis, and it got the attention of a lot of people in the contracting community, as you might imagine. And I thought it was important to tie these two stories together because while not all of that $8 billion will be spent on IT, over half of it most likely will be. So if you're a contractor that's out there looking for opportunities for the year end and you're looking at DHS, you now know that they've got some money to spend, and you also know that you need to be classifying your solutions in terms of agile solutions per the directive of the agency CIO.
The story mentions that they are going to award Eagle 2 at DHS. This says soon, according to Kevin Boshiers from DHS. Eagle 1 still in effect. Do we have any sense of how much of that business, that $8 billion, might go through Eagle?
I think a good portion of the IT business will certainly go through the existing Eagle contract. Eagle 2, probably not going to be up and running much before the end of the fiscal year, if by then. Even if they make the awards, obviously there'll be the attendant round of protests. So, but Eagle's their go-to contract. A number of federal agencies go to existing indefinite delivery, indefinite quantities towards year end for their IT buys. So I would expect to see whether it's DHS or DOD or whoever else. If you're on those IDIQ contracts, you're well positioned, and if you're not, then you need to team up with someone who is.
The connections there where I was going to go next is if you're not on them, there still is opportunity because you'll be able to lock up with folks that are and be able to do some business that way.
And that's really the way that if you talk to anybody in federal IT contracting, particularly when you get into another month or two of the fiscal year, Francis, that's how they're going to be doing almost all of their year-end IT buying.
Larry Allen's got two FCW stories tied for third most important federal news story of the week, and you can read both of those posted now at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Alan Paller's third most important federal news story of the week is an Associated Press story you can find on federalnewsradio.com. The headline is Budget Official Picked for Top Cybersecurity Post. We touched on this a little bit yesterday, but I think of the whole story surrounding Howard Schmidt's retirement. That's the part of it that I thought was most interesting. And it fits a pattern that we've seen other places in the administration that while certainly Mr. Daniel is an expert in cyber affairs, there's that budget background, Leon Panetta, the other significant example, and there are others, of people who are not only subject matter experts, but also very well versed in the budget aspect of it.
I think this time, with the trouble in Congress over new bills, it's particularly important that a person who knows where all the levers are and where all the money is buried, it has the cyber coordination role, because we can't wait for Congress to suddenly start playing nice with each other. And since they're not going to, we're not going to get any substantial motion there. So we have to do everything that we would have done under the bills under the current authorities. The federal government has one lever that's bigger than any other lever. It's the $80 billion it spends on IT. When you heard $8 billion attached to Agile, I read that story too. I immediately thought, private cloud, meaning the minute someone put billions and cloud together, everybody who was already selling something else was suddenly selling private cloud as the name mm-hmm. for their thing they were selling before. So everybody's going to rename whatever they're doing Agile, because I'm Agile.
Right.
We're all Agile.
Well, depends when you ask, I guess.
In this case, the finance guy can pull together the CFOs. They're his family. And the CFOs can control what agencies, how agencies do procurement. So the vendors may have to actually play well with each other and deliver secure systems instead of the junk that they've been delivering. So I'm really excited about having Mike in that role. If he uses all the levers he has control of, we could move security forward in the government really quickly.
The process that goes on here is not complicated. The cybersecurity coordinator position is not Senate confirmed, so Mr. Daniel can move right into this role and get started immediately. Any thoughts about the possibility that someone was chosen for this role, not just this role, but for any role at this point in government, with an idea that that person may be a caretaker because we're not quite sure what will happen in November?
There's always a presumption. If you're late in the administration, he's just been given a job because he's a big donor. He's just been given a job because no one else will take it. I don't think so in this case. There is a real sense of impending bad things happening, and they don't want to be caught having not acted quickly. So I think they actually moved to get the person who could do the most good most quickly into that job, and I don't see it as a caretaker role in this one job.
Alan Paller's third most important federal news story of the week is an Associated Press story headline, Budget Official Picked for Top Cybersecurity Post, and you can read it. And you can also hear my conversation with Alan from yesterday about Howard Schmidt's retirement at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. The second most important federal news story of the week is selected by Alan Paller and by Larry Allen on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Coming next, it's In-Depth with Francis Rose.
Caregiver, advocate, scientist and educator, experienced healer, supporter, friend and guide, diligent multitasker, willing challenge acceptor, care coordinator, leader, partner. At Kaiser Permanente, that's what we mean when we say the word nurse. You are a key element to our coordinated healthcare teams. Your selfless dedication to providing extraordinary patient care. Your tireless devotion to educating other nurses. Your leadership within our organization and the communities we serve. Your impact on every patient, every team member, every person you see. There are a million ways we could describe the challenging role you accept every day, and all of them would end with the words, thank you. So to all of the Kaiser Permanente nurses who facilitate and deliver high-quality, affordable healthcare services, during Nurses Week and every week of the year, may all of you live long and thrive.
Kaiser Foundation Health Plan of the Mid-Atlantic States Incorporated, 2101 East Jefferson Street, Rockville, Maryland, 20852.
Adobe Acrobat Pro is actually used very commonly for PDF archiving. If you've got a lot of files of different formats and different types, if you just save these files in all these different formats, then 20 years later somebody wants to look at the file, they'd actually have to have the program that could open up that file. So for digital archiving, you'd rather have a standardized file format.
Stratford University's Tech Talk Radio, Saturday mornings from 9 to 10 on 1500 AM.
This is John Gilroy from Federal Tech Talk. You know, I've done over 260 interviews here on Federal News Radio, but many listeners still ask, what does your company do, John? My company is called Armature. For the past decade, we have worked with organizations that have programs for conformity assessment, accreditation, standards, and policy management. Is your agency responsible for conformity assessment? If so, then please visit our website, armaturecorp.com. We can help.
The leader in informational seminars on federal benefits, financial, and retirement planning. NITP was established in 1984 and is 100% devoted to federal planning seminars. The mission is to educate federal employees and enable them to make fully informed decisions regarding their financial futures and retirement options. Through a variety of teaching platforms and seminars, NITP has the experience to help with your planning needs. Visit NITPinc.com. That's NITPinc.com for more information.
What is transformational leadership? How have government leaders successfully led transformations and what they considered before undertaking such initiatives? Join host Michael Keegan next week as he explores these questions and much more with Bob Reasoner, author of the recent IBM Center report, A Leader's Guide to Transformation, on the Business of Government Hour.
Tom Temin here with a preview of Friday's Federal Drive. How do you get information past the bristling battalion of censors in China? The Broadcasting Board of Governors is trying to figure that one out. Plus, the Merit Systems Protection Board is overhauling the way it operates. It's the first comprehensive review in the history of the agency. Those stories and more tomorrow morning, starting at 6 on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. And for all the latest federal news, be sure to visit federalnewsradio.com.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. The Federal News Countdown this week features the three most important federal news stories of the week as chosen by Alan Paller of the Sands Institute and Larry Allen of Allen Federal Business Partners. And we're up to
number two.
The second most important federal news story of the week as selected by Alan Paller is from the American Forces Press Service. It's from the Pentagon, essentially. And the headline is DOD expands contractor cyber threat protection program. I imagine you see this because it is an expansion of information sharing as a good thing. Am I right?
It's a very good thing. In fact, if you think about the perspective of somebody who's being attacked, and every defense contractor is under attack right now because there's so many valuable assets that they have, that he has no way of knowing what to look for. Meaning one person might have seen one thing, another person might have seen another thing. He has no way to get that. And the advanced attacks aren't picked up by the commercial tools. Some of the commercial tools are good, but most of them only see the simple things. So he has no way to protect himself. So this is the accumulation of all of the – think of them as signatures, but they're more advanced. All the different ways people are attacking to protect a much broader swath of the defense arena. And I think it will expand beyond defense because DHS was completely supportive of the expansion to the larger DOD community. There wasn't any fight at all on this. It's a partnership.
I'm encouraged by this story for one reason, and that is it looks like we're finally past the point where a private sector company will say, well, I don't know if I really want to talk about this because I don't want anybody to know that I'm having – that my system is vulnerable, or I don't want anybody to know that I've had an incident or whatever. It looks like we're past that. Is that a fair assessment on my part?
They still don't want anyone to know they've had an incident, but they're willing at least to say, I ought to make sure I have as few as possible. They will do anything to keep you from knowing that they lost sensitive data, almost, in fact, lie to your face about it.
And that's understandable, I suppose, but that is kind of strikes me as detrimental to this kind of information sharing experience.
Yeah, information sharing in this field, the key breakthrough that will come in information sharing is when we do it the way we do medical information sharing, where the patient doesn't have to say, I have the disease, but the doctor can anonymize the data and we can have a center for disease control. This is a good step in that direction to where we don't have to name the guy who got attacked, and yet everybody can share the use of the signature. Not all the way there, but this is a big part of the solution.
You're nodding your head, Larry. I imagine that anonymity is going to give sufficient cover to the contractors to be able to be willing to participate in something
like this. The anonymity, Francis, is important, but also being able to collect the types of incidents that people are seeing. So if you know that you've had one type of an intrusion and you can safely report that, that tells all of the people out there in a similar field that there's this type of potential threat there for them as well. And just as Alan was saying, it could be that five of us have different types of threats that the other four don't know about. Well, we don't need to know really who those other four people are, but it would be useful to know who's trying to come in through the front, back, or side door, and I think that's where we're moving towards with this.
What's the next level that we might see in something like this, Alan?
Well, there's a little level in here, which is NSA sees certain things that nobody else sees because they've just got better sensor networks than anyone else. So the inclusion of NSA signatures in this package might start on day one, might not. But when we move this to protect the critical infrastructure, the power companies, because these are the same, they're also under threat, then the question will be how much of the NSA things can we share? What's interesting about this is not data being given to the DIB companies, the advanced industrial base companies. This is actually being data being given to the ISPs, and they tap the lines, say, oops, something's happening you might want to watch out for. So there is at least some control, and we're hoping that can be expanded to protect power companies and to protect financial organizations as well, because the kinds of attacks that are being used are very similar.
You say you're hoping it can be. What would prevent it from be, or do we just not know yet?
There's a question when you're dealing with very sensitive sources and methods. If you let the data out too far, your ability to collect more data goes to zero. So it's how far they're okay spreading it through the defense community. They don't necessarily want to have people gaming the system to see what they know in other arenas. So the defense industry is under contract to DOD. These other guys are quite independent and often not even American companies. So there's just a sensitivity. So we see that. And then the third step, the really big step, will be when every person who does an after-action report, an incident response project, has as part of his contract a requirement that he provides the data in a computer-readable format without naming that it was Alan Fowler whose machines were taken over, so that it's a universal thing, and that's when we get to the whole Center for Disease Control model. So right now we're getting volunteer contributions through the DC3, the Defense Cybercrime Center, and through some of the other players, but we're not getting a universal data feed. We'll get information sharing when the contract that under which a bank hired a red teamer includes a clause that says, I get a feed of that data into the Center for Disease Control.
So this is the first plank of a bridge that will eventually get us to that full data sharing destination.
But it's a big plank.
Yeah,
it's a major step forward. It's not something we have to wait for the bridge to get benefit.
Yes.
You get a lot of benefit right from what we're doing here.
Alan Paller's second most important federal news story of the week is headline, DOD expands contractor cyber threat protection program. And you can read about it at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Larry Allen's second most important federal news story of the week next on the Federal News Countdown on In-Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Here's Margie Graves, Deputy CIO DHS, on the Federal Executive Forum on Virtualization, sponsored by Red Hat.
We have to solve the security issue, but once we get there, we're going to see a lot more teaming between hardware, software, and service provider vendors so that there are unified solutions brought to the federal government for our use in procurement.
Listen to the whole program made possible by Trezza Media Group. Log on to federalnewsradio.com.
There are a lot of virtualization solutions out there from proprietary companies, but they are expensive and lock you into long-term relationships with vendors that you might not want. But Red Hat Enterprise Virtualization is a highly secure open-source platform for mission-critical workloads. Red Hat technology is based on open standards, so your IT future still belongs to you. And if you're ready to start cloud computing, this is the way to do it. 90% of public clouds already run on open source. This is Paul Smith from Red Hat, and if you want to learn more from the open source leader, check us out at redhat.com/virtualize.
Supporting our troops has never been more important, and the military's need for strategic procurement decisions has never been stronger. Smart sourcing begins with GSA's multiple award schedules. GSA makes it easier to get what you need, when you need it, on time and on budget. You'll save time and money by reducing costly delays in purchasing services and products with the flexibility and control you need to negotiate better pricing. GSA also provides best value through established contracts with pre-qualified vendors and streamlined access to a wide selection of contractors. You can also create blanket purchase agreements to meet your command's recurring requirements. To find out how GSA's multiple award schedules can help you support your mission, visit gsa.gov/ACQMPM. That's gsa.gov/ACQMPM.
The Federal Drive is sponsored by Learning Tree International.
Learning Tree International is the number one provider of IT classroom training to the federal government. They provide high-quality instructor-led IT and management training to government professionals and contractors at all levels. Call 1-800-THE-TREE or enroll today at learningtree.com/gov. That's learningtree.com/gov.
The Federal Drive, brought to you by Learning Tree International, airs weekday mornings from 6 to 10 and online at federalnewsradio.com.
You are what you eat. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Nicholas Garlow with HHS HealthBeat. Think about what you eat. Think about how much of it you eat and how often. 20,000 participants did just that, and researchers were able to make food patterns of it based on demographics. Suzanne Judd is at the University of Alabama at Birmingham.
The first pattern, we called it traditional in the abstract. It's made up of people that have mixed meals, Chinese food, Mexican food, pizza, pasta. And if you look at the mean age, it tends to be younger.
Some diet patterns can give us bad habits. For instance, a sweet tooth or a craving for takeout or the more than occasional happy hour drink.
Consuming that much processed and sweet food is a little bit alarming. One would think that's probably not going to be a good thing.
The study was supported by the National Institutes of Health. Learn more at healthfinder.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Nicholas Garlow.
For those dedicated to outstanding public service, meeting the expectations of the American people in an increasingly complex world is a challenge. But with smart programs, people, and performance management, government employees are the epicenter of positive change. The Performance Institute presents the 12th Annual Government Performance Summit, June 18th through 20th at the Marriott at Metro Center. Learn how to create the future for government leadership, measurement, and a motivated workforce. Space is limited. Register now at governmentperformance.org. Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. The Federal News Countdown features the three most important federal news stories of the week, as selected every Friday by two people who are experts in the world of the federal government. This week, it's Larry Allen, the president of Allen Federal Business Partners, and Alan Paller, director of research at the Sands Institute. And Larry Allen, your second most important federal news story of the week is from NextGov. Schmidt resigns from White House Cyber Post, and we have a lot of info on that at federalnewsradio.com as well. Now, Allen's number three story was the Mike Daniel angle of this. But what do you think is the significance either of Howard Schmidt's tenure as cybersecurity coordinator or his departure at this point? What's important about it beyond the fact that this is the highest, supposed to be the highest profile civilian cyber role?
Well, before I get into that, Francis, all it is proof that great minds like Alan and I think alike. So that's important to know. But it is a significant story. I think that it's significant for a couple of reasons. One is, look, this person is the, what, cyber czar inside the White House. But the position was never created to have the bench strength or the reach that a lot of advocates had hoped it would have inside the cybersecurity field. Not completely a surprise, but certainly the position was less than had been hoped for. What was originally envisioned was someone who would be able to come in and sit on top of DOD and DHS, almost kind of like in the intelligence community where you have the director of Central Intelligence and now the person above the director of Central Intelligence, that has the authority and the bench strength to do certain things in the intelligence field and can coordinate things at the very top level of the administration. Not necessarily Howard Schmidt's fault. He never really had that. oomph behind him. And one of the things in the article that stood out to me about that was when he went and made recommendations, very public recommendations, for example, verifying individual identities and getting some money behind that, Congress took a very short time to essentially thumb their nose at him. Not going to do that to somebody who's the director of Central Intelligence if they make a similar request for something in their field where they're the subject matter expert, because that person has way too much weight and authority behind that position. But here you see that the resulting cyber one doesn't have that.
I understand your point. I'm not sure, because of the impudent Congress that we have right now, that I necessarily agree with that. Alan, my thought, and he's referring to NSTIC, and you and I talked a little bit about NSTIC. We've talked about it on a number of occasions. The reason I disagree a little bit with my friend Larry is because of the National Defense Authorization Act that just passed, that essentially was Congress thumbing its nose at Leon Panetta, who certainly you can argue is maybe one of the most distinguished, most respected people, and holds one of the most distinguished, respected positions in the administration. And they said, we don't think you've given enough money, so even though you don't want it, we're going to give it to you anyway. It's the same idea. We're going to do what we want, whether you like it or not.
Yeah, it's a very hard city to get consensus in, especially in election year. But it's been harder. I came in 69, and there was a lot of graciousness, even in the House in those days. And the House completely dissolved, and even the Senate graciousness to one another, and doing business with each other to advance the national good instead of to advance personal interests seems to have passed. So you can whine about it, but instead of whining about it, the administration has enormous power. And I don't mean power to tell people what to do. They can cause things to happen using their procurement power. So I know I sound like a broken record, so I won't do it too often. But if you want to change the world, you can change it. For example, people want – right now they want better security in the critical infrastructure. If you add up the federal and state and local ownership of power and water and telecommunications, you got enough to prove you can do it without ever having any congressional action at all. We need to stop blaming other people and get on with the job. And that's why and Howard did that in one particular area. And I don't think anyone knows how much he did this. So I want to do it. He and his deputy, Sameer Balotra. But they took this idea of continuous monitoring. And instead of saying, you all ought to, they said, we're going to add a big chunk of money, not a billion, but a big chunk of money to the budget for spending this year. And they got that through Congress. So I think to the extent continuous monitoring gets rapid adoption, Howard gets credit for that.
He took a rapid – again, we chatted a little bit about this yesterday. He took a little bit of a rap for not being more out there, more speaking more publicly, going on kind of the PR rounds. It strikes me that given what you talked about, Larry, about what he had to work with and what he didn't, that – his time was likely much better spent doing the kinds of things behind the scenes that Alan's talking about rather than being an evangelist, so to speak.
Well, I think there's a benefit to both. And clearly, anytime you have a Mr. Inside, which Howard was, I always argue you need a Mr. Outside, too, just like the Army had 70 years ago the last time they won football games. But
that's a cheap shot.
Also indicative of that I have a nephew who plays on the team, but there you go. Any event, this is a situation where I think the point you raise is a fair one. Howard did a nice job doing the inside stuff and working the channels, but you do need somebody who can give some visibility to the overall cyber strategy of the government. We talked a little bit off air about the fact that you have this competition between DHS and DOD as the top dog in there, and they both have a lot of stuff going on. Wouldn't it be nice to have a central person, kind of like a Steve Van Roeckel as the CIO, who does go out and hit the hustings a little bit, properly so, I think, to be able to bring this type of visibility to cyber?
What, if anything, did Howard leave on the table that that you would like to see either Mike Daniel or somebody else in government pick up?
Well, he had three priorities. One was – actually, I forgot one of them, but one was the identity management and one was the continuous monitoring. There was a third one that he had in addition to that. But I think he's made really good progress on both of those. And I wouldn't – my sense is now let's do it. Let's stop admiring it. And stop admiring the problem and get on with it. And that's why I think this guy with the money is – I mean, a guy who knows where the money is a much more valuable person than a speaker. Because right now, the federal government ought to lead by example rather than telling other people what to do.
The second most important federal news story of the week, as selected by Larry Allen, is headline, Schmidt resigns from White House cyber post. It's from NextGov, and it's posted now, linked for you to read at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. The most important federal news story of the week is selected by Larry Allen and Alan Paller when the Federal News Countdown continues on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Join AFSCA Bethesda in congratulating the 2012 Government-Wide Initiatives Excellence Awards recipients. Winners include Amy Taylor, Treasury, Financial Security and Fraud Detection Award, Prince Levy, IRS, Cooperative Research and Development Award, and David Alexander, DHS, Geospatial Award, as well as category winners from GSA, EPA, DOJ, and other government agencies. If you would like to get involved with AFSCA Bethesda, go to AFSCAbethesda.org for more information. That's AFSCAbethesda.org.
Here at Best Buy, we have expanded our selection of HD Radio car stereo receivers. New HD Radio car stereos are in store and offer you the best in digital entertainment and information. More music from local HD2, HD3 radio stations, iPhone, iPod control, digital traffic, iTunes tagging, and more. Best Buy has the leading brands, Alpine, Pioneer, Kenwood, JVC, lots to choose from, with prices as low as $120. Here at Best Buy, we recommend HD Radio technology.
From curbing the AIDS epidemic in children to capturing the world's most notorious arms trafficker, federal employees accomplished some amazing feats in 2011. Now, 33 feds are being honored for their work. They've been named Service to America Medal finalists. Federal News Radio interviews each of the nominees in our Service to America Medals Tracker Series. Find out what makes them tick and what interesting work they are focusing on next at federalnewsradio.com. Search for Service to America.
Newsmakers, talk to Jason Miller.
Peter Johnson, the Bureau of Engraving and Printing's Chief Information Officer.
We have implemented an Oracle ERP successfully, on time, on schedule, with no hiccups, which we're very proud of. We've also integrated financials, procurement, manufacturing, supply chain management. We've also terminated a 25-year-old mainframe running COBOL. So we are now a 21st century modern manufacturing environment.
Hear the entire interview online, federalnewsradio.com. Listen each week for Tech Tuesday on Federal News Radio. Every Tuesday, we zero in on how technology inspires innovation. Tuesday mornings at 11, it's Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy, the latest on products that help bring policy to life. Then Tuesday afternoons at 12:30, join Federal News Radio's Jason Miller for Ask the CIO. Hear from the top of the food chain on how your agency is using technology today. Tech Tuesday, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. The Federal News Countdown this week features the three most important federal news stories of the week as selected by Larry Allen of Allen Federal Business Partners and Alan Paller of the Sands Institute. And we're up to
number one.
Larry Allen's most important federal news story of the week is my colleague Jason Miller's story headline, GSA Expo turns into a smaller, toned-down affair. Larry, you can tell if you look on the FedCam at federalnewsradio.com, which is totally made up, you can see that you're nice and tan from being in San Antonio. And so you attended this conference this year. This is, what, your 10th or so?
I've been to every GSA Expo except for the very first one.
Oh, man. So you're a veteran. What did you see down there this year?
Well, it's what I didn't see that really initially caught my eye, Francis. Obviously, what we didn't see is we didn't see a lot of customers, and we didn't see a lot of GSA people, at least not as many as we usually see. Overall, the expo usually attracts somewhere between 8,000 to 10,000 people. This year, the total's numbered about 5,300. So down, some would say, 40% over what we're accustomed to seeing. And the other things we didn't see were some of the trappings. Any expo that you can think of that we go to, and this has been true of previous GSA expos, had the banners up on the outside of the convention center, nice red, white, and blue theme. There was none of that this year. You really had to know that the GSA Expo was in San Antonio. And so those were two very big things right off the top that indicated that this was a very different experience because of the well-publicized problems that GSA had had earlier, late winter, early spring, with its PBS Western States event. Expo, always the largest event that GSA holds every year. Not surprising that the agency would want to make sure that they sent every visible sign they could that this was a different type of conference.
Yeah, there's going to be a domino effect. We're starting to see it already. Jason Story says the DOD's canceled its annual procurement conference in Orlando. I think a year from now, the conference and event business in the federal space will look completely different than it looks today. Is that fair to say, do you think, Alan?
I don't know the whole space, but I can tell you specifically that that's happening in the security space. It, literally every 4 or 5 hours, I get an email on some aspect. But it's actually good. You might say, well, don't you want a lot of conferences? And the answer is, if you're a vendor, you don't. You have to go to 15 different places. If you're General Alexander or somebody, you don't. You have to go to 80 places. If you are an attendee, you don't. What you'd like to do is go to a conference where the best speakers are, because when you go to the other conferences, since there's so many, you get one good speaker and the three after him are some sales guy pretending not to give a sales pitch. So there's a lot of value in consolidating. And the reason I can say it is that NIST has actually taken the lead. They had a small conference called the IT Security Automation Conference. They have brought that one together with the Trusted Computing Conference, with the National Cybersecurity Innovation Conference, and with at least, I think, two others. I think agencies are now bringing their security conferences. It's the first week in October in Baltimore, so it's a short drive, and yet it's out of the city. And I think the best part of it is that that you can go to one place and get all of them, and you get the best speakers instead of the spread out. So I don't think there's any negative in consolidation at all, none.
I've heard that from a number of people, Larry, that there are just too many now, and not just in the security space, as Alan's talking about. You could go to this or that event or somebody's lunch or every day of the week pretty much if you were able to, if you wanted to. And one person commented to me last week, a lot more work will get done because people won't be going to all these things. And that's on both sides of the equation, the agency side and the vendor side.
Well, yes and no. I think that there is a place for some conferences. Again, whether or not I would question whether they needed the Western States PBS Expo, probably not. They probably should roll everything at GSA up under one banner under the GSA Expo and make it an annual deal. In fact, the former administrator, Martha Johnson, had been moving to do just that with the Expo by bringing in elements of other conferences like the telecommunications conference that used to be separate. As of last year, it was part of the Expo.
They shrunk IRMCO down.
Right, and she'd even made some attempts last year to bring PBS into the Expo tent, kicking and screaming at the time. Probably they'd be a little bit more willing to do that today. So that you, in terms of GSA sponsoring an event, this would be the event that they sponsored. Pluses and minuses to it. Everybody's there. Nobody's traveling 20 times. You have the opportunity for excellent communication, and that's what you really miss when you don't bring people together often enough. You don't want to bring them together too often, but you need to bring them together often enough so that there is good communication, a good exchange of ideas. It's not just the expo part, although that's the part that we tend to focus on. It's also the thousands of hours of training that GSA offers to federal buyers who rely on this to either get certified or expand their certifications in different areas of acquisition. So it performs a couple of important different functions, I think. And if you can find a way to bring everybody in under that tent, you're never going to make all of the subcategories of GSA contractors happy. You know, IT contractors don't always want to sit by side with furniture contractors. And the public building service up to this point hasn't wanted to sit down with either of them. However, I think there's a point to having everybody in one place for a while so that you can hit as many points along the continuum as you can.
You actually, this NIST project, it's NIST and DHS and NSA and SANS is helping. They actually found a way to solve the problem. You may not want to sit down with them for a long time. You don't mind sitting down with them if the speaker is somebody you all want to hear. So what they did is they made it a federated conference. So everybody gets to run his own conference outside of the joint sessions. So I can get sit down with my PBS guys, and yet I don't have to. I don't have the exhibit's larger, so I can see all of them, and the main speakers get to speak to everybody. It's got to be not a big convention center to pull this off. So you have rooms for small ones, but I think it's going to be the future of conference, federal conferences. They'll still have their own. It's like a mall.
Yeah.
Well, their own store, but there's services across all the stores that make for parking and food courts and things like that. I think it's really a good idea.
And that's what I was alluding to at the beginning when I said I think in a period of time in the future, in a very short period of time in the future, the conference and event space will look dramatically different, not just fewer, but structurally. Yeah, structurally, it will look a lot different.
I think so.
Larry Allen's most important federal news story of the week is Federal News Radio's Jason Miller's story, headline: GSA Expo turns into a smaller, toned-down affair. It is linked up, like all of our stories on the countdown, at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Alan Paller's most important federal news story of the week will be next to wrap up this week's Federal News Countdown on In-Depth with Francis Rose.
Recently, UnitedHealthcare was selected to serve the families in the TRICARE West region, and we want those who we will serve to know more about us. UnitedHealthcare is part of a company of over 115,000 people, serving over 75 million Americans nationwide. Our people work hard to be a trusted healthcare partner for all of our members, and we're proud of our track record of quality service. The American Medical Association ranks us number one in claims processing accuracy among the seven leading commercial health insurers for 2011. J.D. Power & Associates names us number one in its employer satisfaction survey. And Fortune magazine has named us its most admired health insurer 2 years in a row. As provider for the members of TRICARE West, our people will work every day to put our unmatched provider network, industry-leading innovations, and passion for service to work for you. We are UnitedHealthcare. And for us, the chance to help military families isn't just a job. It's an honor. UnitedHealthcare.
Compassionate caregiver, advocate, scientist, and educator. Experienced healer, supporter, friend, and guide. Diligent multitasker, willing challenge acceptor. Care coordinator, leader, partner. At Kaiser Permanente, that's what we mean when we say the word nurse. You are a key element to our coordinated healthcare teams. Your selfless dedication to providing extraordinary patient care. Your tireless devotion to educating other nurses. Your leadership within our organization and the communities we serve. Your impact on every patient, every team member, every person you see. There are a million ways we could describe the challenging role you accept every day, and all of them would end with the words, thank you. So to all of the Kaiser Permanente nurses who facilitate and deliver high-quality, affordable healthcare services, during Nurses Week and every week of the year, may all of you live long and thrive.
Kaiser Foundation Health Plan of the Mid-Atlantic States Incorporated, 2101 East Jefferson Street, Rockville, Maryland, 20852.
What is transformational leadership? How have government leaders successfully led transformations and what they considered before undertaking such initiatives? Join host Michael Keegan next week as he explores these questions and much more with Bob Reasoner, author of the recent IBM Center report, A Leader's Guide to Transformation, on the Business of Government Hour.
Registration is now open for the all-new Management of Change event, featuring interactive sessions around cloud, mobility, and security, and a future technology expo. June 3rd through 5th at the Hyatt Regency, Cambridge, Maryland. This government industry training forum is hosted by the American Council for Technology and Industry Advisory Council. Register and learn more at actgov.org/managementofchange. That's actgov.org/managementofchange.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, the Federal News Countdown, featuring the three most important federal news stories of the week as selected by Larry Allen and Alan Paller, and they're all linked up online for you at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Alan, your number one most important federal news story of the week is from the National Defense Magazine published by NDIA, and the headline is Fears Grow That Terrorists Could Co-opt Anonymous Hacking Group. That sounds really, really, really bad to me.
There are a lot of dimensions that are all bad.
Yeah.
So the history is that nation states that were not happy with other nation states would actually help finance the local terrorists in that other place so that they could bring down other nations. So there's a long, many, many eons of people using unhappy people in other places. In this particular case, it's not so much the terrorists using the others, but nation states. The headline is about terrorists, but the really big question is, can other nations actually co-opt the anonymous group to wreak havoc? And the answer is, can terrorist groups? And the answer is they can. And the proof comes from the Russian mafia days. A lot of the people who worked for the Russian mafia doing those cases had no intention of doing that. They were actually recruited under false flag, as if they were working for the government or something else. They got in, and once they got in, they were threatened with death and death to their families if they didn't keep doing it, meaning that hackers tend to be very naive, and they can be persuaded that there's a cause they need to do or they're doing it for the good. They don't know. They're very often young, often naive. Some are very sophisticated, but enough of them are very good and very naive that this is a really dangerous problem. And there's a lot of discussion about Pearl Harbor, cyber Pearl Harbor, big things. And some people say, well, that'll never happen. The guys who are terrorists don't know how to do it, and the nation states would never do it because they don't want it to happen themselves. There is a group who will do it, and that's the group of really smart people who are so angry that they actually don't care what happens. We called them juvenile delinquents in the old days when they just – you know, destroyed buildings.
Broke windows out of buildings, yeah.
But now you can break windows that have profound impact. And if you get incented to make it bigger, you actually have – and I know I'm sounding hyperbolic, and I don't mean to be. This is actually the first time I've seen a public discussion of this. This is the discussion that's happening in the top of the National Command Authority about where the next bad thing is going to come from. So this is the tip of the iceberg. A lot of people are figuring out that if you add – angry people and highly technical people, and they're inside your country, they can do an enormous amount of damage, and we need to move reasonably quickly to be able to defend against that.
There's a quote in this story, Larry, that is chilling to me, quite honestly. David Smith, director of the Potomac Institute Cyber Center, says, if somebody decides they're going to be anonymous, capital A, referring to the group, they are anonymous, small a, with the connotation of the dictionary meaning of the word. So you could get Russians, Chinese, Iranians. You could start getting a nation-state threat or an al-Qaeda getting into the business of masquerading literally as anonymous. And that kind of gets to what Alan's talking about. When someone says, we're anonymous and we're doing this, capital A, anonymous, there's no way to know whether they really are part of this group that has claimed to be anonymous in the past or if it's the Chinese government.
Right. And what is important about this, I think, from that perspective, Francis, is this is a shift from the types of discussions we had in the cybersecurity arena, even as recently as 2 years ago, where the discussion at that time predominated around hackers and non-nation state-sponsored incursions into people's IT systems and security systems. The concern at that time was that how do you respond against somebody who hacks into your system if they're player, and you may not be sitting where they anywhere where they can find you, but you know that it's not a nation state. Well, today, it could very well be a nation state now. However, your ability to discern that is still as impossible as it was 2 years ago. So if anything, what we're seeing here with this story is we're opening up the front on who we have to protect against and who might be predisposed to not just having the will, but the talent and ability to cause some real havoc with our systems.
This question, Alan, may be so philosophically existential that it might not even be worth responding to, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Is it more dangerous? Is our national security more threatened by the fact that certain kinds of devastating attacks could occur, or that we may not know what the source of those attacks would be?
Our national security is most threatened by something slightly to the left of where you are, and that is it came from Barry McCullough, who was the head of the cyber fleet, the 10th Fleet for Cyber Command. And he said, we have kinetic weapon superiority. The opposition is spending their time building the talent to take command and control of our systems. They have the capacity to do that. We're on the wrong side of the spending curve by a factor of four. So if you want to know where the national defense is most at risk, you see little bits of it with the drones getting – somebody can see the camera. Somebody can control the drones. That's the tip of the iceberg of people taking over command and control. That's the main one. The other ones aren't so big. What you have to do with the other ones is build very strong defenses. You can't go find all those people. Anonymous is anonymous. So it's really easy. We have to defend the systems wonderfully. That's why I'm back to my one horse. That's why we have to spend the federal money to buy secure systems instead of allowing people to waste the federal money.
Alan Paller's most important federal news story of the week is from National Defense, NDIA's magazine, and you can read it linked up at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Fears grow that terrorists could co-opt anonymous hacking group. Gentlemen, thank you very much for being on the program this week. It's always a pleasure to see both of you individually. So put together, it makes it even that much more fun, and I appreciate you being on the show today. You can hear this program again archived at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth, and all the stories that we counted down today with Larry Allen and Alan Paller are linked up already at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Hour number two of In-Depth with Francis Rose coming next on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.